Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 176 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast for the week of November 17th, 2017. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me as always is completely and totally necessary microphone accessory, Dan Ryan.
Yeah, I am.
Never has an accessory in the history of gaming added more to a game than that microphone.
Ooh, except the vitality sensor.
Ah, that never came out, though.
We found sadness.
Dan and I will be continuing our ill-advised journey through every single Mario game. It's only ill-advised because we're tired. So journey through every single Mario game this week with part 3 of our Mario retrospective. But before we go any further, here is your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss whether or not I'm actually Daffy Duck in disguise. Should Dan cut his hair? Or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener.
No, I'm not cutting my hair.
Good plan.
I mean, it's not a great idea. Like, the optics aren't ideal, but I'm still not doing it. Holding on. Holding out
for something. So just a quick off the top here, want to issue a quick little apology for the last 2 weeks of technical difficulties. 2 weeks ago, our episode cut off at the 44-minute mark for some reason. It was some sort of error with uploading. And last week's episode, the commercials got all wonky. So our intrepid editor, Evan, is working on that stuff right now to overcome these technical hurdles for you. Because he loves you. He told us so before this show. He said, you know what? I want you to let the listeners know that I love every single one of them.
Deeply. Truly. Madly.
Thank you, Anakin Skywalker. And you know what? That was more believable. You saying those words, totally more believable.
Well, Chris, as we all know, I am a fantastic actor.
You are superior to Hayden Christensen in every conceivable way.
Every conceivable way. I mean, that guy just sucks on toast.
It sucks on everything. Doesn't you have to be toast? So, Dan, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not Hayden Christensen, so things are, you know, no one, like, hates me because, like, I ruined their favorite franchise, like...
Or their favorite character.
No, it's been, what's been interesting is that my children have decided that they wanted to play Pokemon Go again. Like, just, all this right. is just now a thing that we've recently picked back up. And, like, you know, when it came out, 7 or 8 years ago, which now that Trump is president, everything feels like it's just so fucking long ago. But that was like last summer, right? And it was just, you know, they weren't quite independent enough to, like, I couldn't really trust them to, like, hold my phone and walk on the sidewalk and not, like, wander off into traffic. But they've hit that age now, so, like, you know, we were sitting here at the house the other day, and it was like 10 minutes before dinner time, and I pulled up Pokemon Go to, like, show my daughter, like, what I had hatched during the day. And I was like, oh shit, there's, like, a legendary thing, I think, like, down the street. Put on your coat! Fuck it, let's go! And, like, so my daughter Katie and I, like, ran out of the house and, like, ran a block away and, like, caught a Skarmory and, like, were super excited about it. I don't even know if that's a legendary or not.
I don't even know what that is.
It's just like a big bird looking fucking thing. And, but like super excited about that. And then like something popped up. She was like, check and see if there's anything else cool around. And like, there was a bay leaf, like another block away. So like we had to run down there. And like the whole time I'm getting texts from Tiff of like, all right, it's dinner time. We're like, fuck you. We're catching Pokemon. Like, and like we hatched a milk tank from an egg. It's animation, like it's kind of suggestively swings its udders back and forth. Like, it's really odd. But, like, yeah, I know, it's very strange. But, like, it just made me happy. You know, like, that game, there's nothing to do in that game, which sucks that they couldn't figure out like what the next step of that game was. But God damn it, it's still fun sometimes.
Well, they introduced, for some people, like I am not one of those people. I quit this game, but my sister still plays this game. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a group of people who work at the tech center who, like, they meet in a conference room and do, like, raids and battles and stuff to catch those weird Pokemon or whatever. And it's crazy. Like, it's, I guess that stuff's not really for everybody. It didn't, like... I mean, obviously, click. The game still makes crap ton of money, and it has a ton of users, but it's not, like, the biggest thing on the planet like it was back when it first came out, which would have been impossible. But
oh, of course.
They've added a lot of stuff to that. I really got to give Niantic credit on what they've done with that particular platform, because, like you said, there really isn't much to do. But
there's really not.
The things that they do are at least stingy. Engaging to some people.
Yeah. I did finally catch a Pikachu.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. They've also announced, and I think this, I don't know if it will have the same like kind of global impact that Pokemon Go had, but they are going to
do the
Harry Potter one with Fantastic Beasts. Mm-hmm. And that's also kind of awesome.
That is kind of awesome. I bet my wife will play that.
Yeah, like I think it'll probably get just as big as Pokemon Go did, but not for nearly as long.
I don't even think it'll get that big, just because, I mean...
Really? I mean...
Harry Potter is absolutely huge, but it would be like making Super Mario 64 again, like, with an equally popular property, you know? Like, at the end of the day, they've already done this. So, the initial novelty of Pokemon Go wasn't even, like... I played Pokemon Go, and I don't have any connection to Pokemon. You know, it was just like, it's this neat thing that everybody is doing.
Right.
And if the game's really something that's essentially similar, just in a different universe, I don't know if I see that catching on the same way. I'm sure it'll be successful, but I don't think anything's going to be Pokemon Go again, at least until it's a completely unique idea.
Yeah.
But what do I know?
I don't know.
Very little, to be honest.
Very, very little.
Very, very little.
You would think 176 episodes into this show that we would have stumbled on something that we knew a little bit about, but no.
No.
It's all bullshit. I mean, just really, you don't even have to listen. Just Wikipedia, whatever the fuck our topic is, and then there you go. Just read it.
Just pretend you're witty, like we do.
Just like every now and again, say fuck. You'll be fine.
All of a sudden you're Dan.
Have yourself some fucking ridiculous beer like this thing that I'm drinking tonight, and you're awesome. If you're 21, I don't know if we have any listeners that are under 21, but if we do, go to bed, do your homework, get off my lawn. Explain to me, write me an email and tell me why Rick and Morty is good, because I don't get it.
I like that show. It's not a religion or anything, but we're entertained by it.
It hasn't, like, changed my life, but...
Yeah, no, yeah. It hasn't gotten to the point where I'm like, oh my god, this is the single greatest thing that's ever happened to television, and in fact, humanity.
I don't think I like Dan Harmon. I didn't like Community either.
Oh, okay, yeah, see, we really liked Community.
Yeah, it didn't grab me.
Well, before we devolve into yet another TV podcast.
Yeah, we've got what? This is part three of our 13-part retrospective on Mario games?
Pretty much, yeah.
I believe? Okay.
All right, so real quick, I did not get Doom yet. My local game store got The Shaft. They were not able to get Doom on Switch for day one.
Which is weird, because who is making a Shaft game now? And shipping that instead of Doom. Was it the Sam Jackson version or the 70s version?
The Sam Jackson version.
Oh, that one just wasn't nearly as good. It lacked a lot of the charm of the original.
It did. It was still good. It was still a good time. Like, right. I was entertained by that flick. But
to make a game out of it now.
Very strange. Well, I mean, they did it with Fight Club. You know, stranger things have happened.
EA does weird things.
They really do. Riddled with microtransactions.
Just loot boxes everywhere in that
and
game.
If you don't buy them, Sam Jackson threatens you. It's
buy my fucking loot boxes. That's my Sam Jackson impersonation. It's almost like he was here on the podcast with us. It's so accurate.
So they say they're going to get it on Friday, and I am excited to get it still.
And that'll be your weekend.
It will be. And that's the thing. Like, I didn't have any time to play it anyway, so I'm not really missing it.
Right.
The only other game time that I really spent was, you guessed it, on Super Mario Odyssey.
No shit.
And I finally made it to New Donk City,
mm-hmm.
which is, might be, it's not even might be, it's probably, yeah, it's easily my favorite 3D Mario place ever.
Really?
That place is ridiculously fun. It's just running around and finding all sorts of weird stuff all over the place. And but the thing with New Donk City is the actual mission that you're on. So New Donk City is, it seems to be just an evolution of the city that the original Donkey Kong took place in. So there's like the pink girders and stuff wherever there's construction.
Mm-hmm.
And Pauline is the mayor. And I was running around and I found like a billboard with some graffiti on it. And that graffiti was the art from the Donkey Kong cabinet, which was freaking awesome. So you get you get there at first and it's all raining and you have to finish one thing. And then Pauline gives you this, these set of missions. You have to go find a bunch of musicians because they're having a city festival. So I find all these, spoiler alert, in case anyone's wondering, I find all the musicians one by one, and they're just kind of like hanging out, playing music on street corners, and you go up to them, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'll be in the festival. That sounds great. And so you eventually get all the musicians together.
Is it the members of Toad the Wet Sprocket?
It is, actually.
That's awesome.
It's three Toad members and one president of the United States of America.
they couldn't get the chick from Letters to Cleo?
They just couldn't. So each piece of
the were busy. I can do this for hours. Let's not.
Each piece of the like each musician you get plays a different instrument, and as you bring them back to the hall where the music's going on, they're playing the Super Mario Brothers theme, and like they keep adding to it with whatever instrument they play. So that's pretty neat. But you eventually get of them, and then you have to do this other little side mission to get restore the power to the festival, because like there's some big power outage. And then you get to play the festival, and it might be the most delightful thing I've ever played in a video game. Like, I was smiling ear to ear the whole time. It's it goes into a 2D segment, which they do a lot in the game, and there's all these fireworks going on in the background, and Pauline is singing that song that was in the commercials, the Jump Superstar, the Mario song that she's singing. It's pretty adorable. And you're basically playing Donkey Kong. Like, you're running on the pink girders and there's barrels everywhere, and you're just jumping over these barrels and collecting coins. And it's not particularly hard, but it's just playing a celebration of Donkey Kong,
of
Mario's first game. And you get to the top and you beat Donkey Kong. It's wonderful. It was so, so wonderful. I was ridiculously happy when playing that. And that was pretty much all the gaming I did this week, because it was all about, you know, getting furniture and moving couches and stuff. So I'm tired,
which is exciting, but
it is very exciting. But yeah, I'm beat. So the only other thing I want to talk about real quick before we get to our Mario retrospective is, and I meant to bring this up last week and I totally forgot. There was a guy that decided to try and, I don't know if he was trying to troll me or whatever, on the Stone Age Gamer Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And so I write for this Stone Age Gamer blog, and I have a lot of fun writing it. And it's a blog. It's just a bunch of opinion pieces that I throw up there, because they asked me to do it, and I was happy to do it, because I will always take an opportunity to talk about video games.
Right.
So I wrote this thing about Double Dragon 4, and in the Facebook post for it, I said, do you remember something along the lines of, do you remember that there was recently a Double Dragon 4? And this guy by the name of Andrew Neal took the time out of his day to go on the Facebook page and say, recently is not, this game came out back in January. Recently was not, it's not recently. It even came out on Switch like in September. That's not recent either. And so,
wow.
I looked at that and I said, okay, good point. That was my response. I said, good point. And then I went back into the headline, And I changed the word recently to, this year, earlier this year. Because, okay, sure, I see where you're coming from. You don't have to be a jerk about it, but I'll be fine. Let's do it that way. I'll just change this and you can be happy. And his response to good point was something along the lines of yet another reason why Stone Age gamers should just stick to selling games and stop doing everything else. And I was like, whoa, buddy.
Wow.
So I questioned him on what are all these other reasons that talking about.
And trolls, Chris.
And I also explained the definition of the word recently. And he just kept getting ruder and kind of coming back and saying like, oh, you're pretending to be a journalist or whatever. And, you're not a games journalist. You're nobody. And I was like, I never claimed to be a journalist or smart. Have you ever heard me claim to be either of those things?
Daily, actually.
Daily. So
that's
I wrote
how most
this
of our communication, like every email yeah. you send me is like from the offices of Chris Randazzo, games journalist. Super fucking smart. Like that's
I wear my
tagline.
I'm super smart cape everywhere I go.
You pretentious son of a bitch.
So I just calmly and politely and entertainingly, like I made kind of a joke out of these responses, and one of my responses was relatively long, and it was great. I shared it with my friends on Facebook. I was like, look at this troll. He's like trying to troll me, and I'm having a good time with him because he keeps telling me I'm not smart, and he keeps coming back with these really stupid answers. And his response was eventually to go back to his original post and say some people like to try to pretend they're smart by making TLDR comments trying to prove that they're better than you, but then the original poster just deletes the whole thing, smiley face. I was like, oh, well, you sure proved your point. So, and then like, I went to respond to that and he blocked me. Like he personally blocked me.
That's awesome.
So I couldn't respond to him. I switched over because I'm an admin of the Stone Age Gamer Facebook page. And I said, and then you realize that the Stone Age Gamer page can't be blocked by its own page. And speaking of deleted, and then I banned him from the Stone Age Gamer, which felt pretty good.
You wield your power responsibly, Chris.
I don't drop the ban hammer. Like, I really don't. Like, the page is automatically set. If anyone ever wants to comment on something, the page is automatically set to not post comments that have curse words in them.
Right, which is why I don't comment, because I am a child and I can't not say shit, fuck, balls, dick, or tits, and, like, I just can't do it.
It just can't do it. So if you've ever posted on the Stone Age Gamer Facebook page and seen your post just isn't there, it's nobody deleted it. It's just kind of an automatic setting. I think because it's a store and it's that kind of a thing. But I try to be nice. And this guy. So if you're online and you see Andrew Neil posting some malarkey, just tell him he's a jerk, because he is.
Or, I mean, just ignore him, because, like, that's what you do with trolls.
Yeah, I know.
You ignore them.
Sometimes I ignore them, but sometimes it just gets to me that they really think that they're right, you know? Well, and that I feel like is the biggest injustice of all, is I can't live with the notion that somebody comes at me with something that is so incredibly wrong and then thinks that they're right just because they got the last word.
Well, no, I mean, if it's anything like, my recent interactions, it's just because they're relentless.
Because they're relentless.
Stop.
Oh, boy. All right, so let's go. Now that that's me, I just really wanted to mention that. Like, it just made me really happy. That guy, Andrew Neil, made my day. That was such a fun time.
You're feeding the trolls, Chris.
Yep, good times.
This is why I'm glad nobody reads anything I write. I don't have to worry about any of this shit.
I got nothing. All right, so here we are. It's 9 o'clock. I want to do this in less than an hour. So here we are. We're gonna do 2000 to 2009, all the Mario games released. Let's jump right in. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay, so the first three, I'm gonna lump these three together because they're all kind of released around the same time. We're
and
talking
no
about
no one's played them.
Yeah, none of us have played them because they never came out in America. The last game we talked about in the previous episode, I think, was the Mario Artist Paint Studio. Well, in 2000, you had Mario Artist Talent Studio, Mario Artist Communication Kit, and Mario Artist Polygon Studio. Their ties to Mario are similar to that of Mario Paint, where they utilize certain assets and or sound effects from Mario games, which is how they kind of click in there. Plus, they have Mario in the title. Talent Studio, boy, these are friggin' weird. All right, so Talent Studio is a game where you can kind of create characters with like really realistic faces, and then you can put them into like prefabricated, extraordinarily Japanese videos. So that's weird. And then you
like
can take
if they
those.
Were so Japanese, if they were made by an American, they'd be incredibly racist.
Yeah, yeah. That sort like of thing. I watched one before the show that was like this one dude who was driving a car super fast, and then another dude who was walking down the street whistling Totaka's theme, and then the car got close and he did like a Power Rangers pose and punched the car into the sun, and then like he got super big while the other one got down and bowed to him and got super small, and that
sounds about right.
Yeah, that was weird. So that's Talent Studio. You could then take those creepy-ass creations that you made in that and send them to other games via the Communication Kit, which was basically like an online, I use the word online very loosely, some sort of structured thing that allows you to transfer all your stuff from the different Paint Studio, Talent Studio, Polygon Studio to one another through some sort of extraordinarily defunct service. That's not even close to a round. And then finally, you have the most interesting one, I think, is the Polygon Studio, which is pretty much what it sounds like. It was a game that let you create and manipulate your own characters made of polygons.
That actually sounds fun.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I mean, it's basically just an art program. I'm kind of sad this doesn't exist elsewhere, where you can just kind of create a bunch of polygons and try to make characters out of them. Because I'm sure, and granted, I haven't played it because it's on the friggin' 64DD, which was only released in Japan, but I can imagine that if it's anything like Mario Paint or some of these other, you know, first-party Mario games, not the weirdo, like, edutainment typing things, it probably did a really good job of explaining to you how to do it and make it look decent. Like, it probably had that Nintendo polish to it. It sounds neat. I would have loved to mess with it.
Maybe similar to, like, 3D Dot Heroes?
Yeah, you know what?
I mean,
I think
less focus on, like, an adventure game afterwards, but, like, something similar to that. Because that, you create your own characters, right?
I think so. I've never actually played it.
I'm not entirely familiar with it.
I really wanted to play it, and I never got around to buying it, and then it just kind of disappeared off of my radar. Mm. All right, so let's see. Next up, Mario Tennis. Not Mario's Tennis, mind you.
Right.
This is Mario Tennis. No apostrophe S here. This came out also in 2000 on N64 and Game Boy Color. I don't know very much about the Game Boy Color version.
I've never played that, but I did play a ton of the 64 version.
Yeah, because it was, what was it, Hot Shots Tennis? No, it was Hot Shots Golf. What was the tennis one?
Virtua Tennis.
It was Virtua Tennis was Sega's one.
Right.
Crap, because this was Camelot that did this, I think.
PlayStation didn't really have a tennis game.
Are you sure there wasn't a Hot Shots Tennis? I feel like there was a Hot
Shots
Tennis.
There was, but I think that wasn't until like PS2 or 3.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It might have been, I think it was later, because like Virtua Tennis was all the rage. And is still awesome to this day. Like Virtua Tennis is still a good time.
True.
But Virtua Mario Tennis is awesome. Did a very good job of not getting too ridiculous with the Mario-ness of it. Like it wasn't
which
so
they
over
did
the top.
Later in the Mario Tennis games.
Right, right.
This was just
still a tennis game first.
Yeah, so unlike Mario's Tennis on Virtual Boy, which was just a tennis game with Mario characters in it, this started to add some of those features, but not enough to take away from a really solid tennis game that's underneath.
Right.
The Game Boy Color one was really neat and remembered at the time similarly for as the golf one, because this also had like an RPG mode in it. Now I remember that.
Okay.
So the N64 one was just like a super cool, awesome tennis game with Mario things. And then the Game Boy Color one, they went that one step further and did all the RPG elements, and people loved it. I was not one of them because I didn't buy it. I was too busy having fun with the N64 game and Virtua Tennis. Anyway, moving on, the next one, also in 2000, was what I thought was a particular stroke of genius as far as making games look good on the Nintendo 64, and yes, that was the original Paper Mario.
Probably the best-looking Mario game on 64.
I would agree, because as we all know, actually, I think N64 games are ugly as sin.
Right. This might be the best-looking N64 game.
That's an interesting thought. I'd really have to pay attention to that. It is certainly up there because they just basically subverted the whole chunky polygon thing by making everything two-dimensional and made of paper on purpose.
Yeah.
It was very clever, and it was functionally a sequel to Super Mario RPG, even though, you know, it was originally called Super Mario RPG 2 and then eventually changed to Paper Mario. The Paper Mario series never grabbed me the same way Super Mario RPG did, you know?
It's not as funny.
It's just not the same. It doesn't have the same soul, you know? Super Mario RPG was this unholy alliance between Square and Nintendo with some of, like, here's some of the best RPG makers of the 16-bit era making a Mario RPG. It was so fresh and clever, and Paper Mario was great, but it just didn't feel quite the same to me, and I think a lot of it had to do with just, like, I didn't like the N64 as much as the Super Nintendo. Like, it was still,
yeah,
you know, there's just something about holding that controller, and I don't know, it just missed the mark barely for me. I did really enjoy it, but not a ton, not as much as a lot of other people did.
Right. I would agree with that. It's got some really interesting ideas, and certainly some ideas that they fleshed out and we'll talk about a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like it was missing sort of that little magic touch, mm-hmm, that Squeenix brought. Well, shit, it wasn't even Squeenix at that time.
Yeah, it was just Squaresoft
at that point. But yeah.
All right. So also the last one released in 2000 was Mario Party 3 for Nintendo 64.
Ugh.
It was more Mario Party.
Is this the cowboy hat one?
No, that was, I think that was 2 was the cowboy hat one.
I fucking hate that picture the most. I don't know why that one bothers me so much, but it really does.
The only thing I have to say about Mario Party 3 was that when Mario Party 1 came out, there was like one kid that kept coming into the store, my store, and saying, when are you getting Mario Party 3 back in? And I said, there is no Mario Party 3. Mario Party 1 just came out. There isn't even a 2. And it's like, no, I have it. I've seen the game in my hands. It's Mario Party 3. What took me forever to figure out was that the kid was looking at the box for the original Mario Party, mm-hmm, and on the box, Mario was punching a dice, and the number 3 is, like, closest to the front of the box. So he thought it was Mario Party 3 when it's just Mario Party and there's a picture of a dice with a 3
and,
on it.
And that is where your rivalry with Andrew Neil started.
That was it. That was him.
You made fun of him for being a dumb shit and not realizing, wow.
Son of a bitch.
Goes back. It's deep, Chris.
It is. Moving on to, oh, do you have music for this? Do you have music thoughts, like top 3 or whatever? Or,
oh, yeah, sure.
You're not doing
of
that anymore?
2000?
Yeah, let's do 2000 because we're about ready to move on to 2001. So hit us with 2000 real quick.
All right. Number 3, Maria Santana featuring the product G&B. It was a good fucking song.
Okay.
Number 2, Smooth Santana featuring Rob Thomas. This was like when Santana put that record out where he had like everybody singing, doing guest shit on it.
Uh-huh.
It was a good record. And then number 1.
I still hear Smooth like all the friggin' time.
It's good song.
It's like on every Muzak station ever.
It's got an excellent guitar riff.
It does.
And then number 1, Breathe by Faith Hill. A song I wouldn't recognize if my life depended on it.
Agreed.
So there you go.
Oh, wait. I think I know what that one sounds like. I think I do. I could be wrong.
I'm very upset that number 14, The Thong Song by Cisco, did not make it higher on the charts because that song is fabulous.
All right, moving on to 2001. Dan, what's the music of 2001?
I'm scrolling. Hold on. We're doing this out of order. All right, 2001, song number 3, the top three songs for the year 2001. Number three, All For You by Janet Jackson. This is when she made a comeback for like a minute, and then everybody went, oh, wait, it's fucking Janet Jackson. Stop it. What are we doing? What are we thinking? This is dumb. Number two was honestly one of my favorite songs, Fallen from Alicia Keys, because she's so good. She's so good. And the number one song of the year 2001 was, again, a song I would not fucking recognize, Hanging by a Moment from Lifehouse.
Oh, God, that was number one?
Yeah.
I'm falling even more in love with you.
Ugh. Nope.
That was not a good song.
I have no idea what that is.
Nothing was everywhere.
I don't.
If that song came on, you're good. You probably intentionally, your brain subconsciously said, no, I'm not registering this song.
Oh, there were so many other good songs this year. Let Me Blow Your Mind, Eve and Gwen Stefani. Mm. That was fucking dope. Destiny's Child, Independent Women. Blue Cantrell's Hit 'Em Up Style. That was good shit. All right.
Anyway, here we are back in Mario Land, where Animal Crossing was released for the GameCube here in America in 2001. Now, where was Mario in Animal Crossing? Unlockable NES games.
There you go. I do love Animal Crossing. I love awesome that first was that? Animal Crossing.
We've talked on the show how much we love the original Animal Crossing, but how awesome was it to unlock all those just NES games, and you would just have them in your basement and be like, all right, now I want to play Punch-Out. So I'm there you gonna. Are, you're playing Punch-Out.
It was
and
awesome.
You're like, man, the GameCube controller is awesome, but not for this.
Does it really work for this? Yeah.
The Animal Crossing was an amazing game.
It but is. Excellent.
Yeah. So anyway, moving on.
A tertiary connection at best, however.
Indeed. This one is all Mario. This is Dr. Mario 64, and it is, in my humble opinion, the best Dr. Mario they've ever made.
I've never played it.
This is also a very good-looking N64 game. It actually kind of apes the Paper Mario style for the title screen, but then completely abandons it after that, which is weird. It's got a lot of hand-drawn animation in it.
Well, that's good.
So it's got all these characters that, you know, don't do anything because it's a puzzle game. It's not like Puzzle Fighter where they have different fall patterns. It's just like, right. I want to be Wario, or I want to be this weird blue dude with a dart on his nose who's from the Wario Land games. Like, it just has this whole cast of characters, including Dr. Mario, and they all have this, like, you know, hand-drawn animation look to them. It's great. And it had four-player mode. It had intelligent use of garbage. It did the whole, like, you know, shadow block thing that they introduced in the Tetris games that were recent at the time. It had a whole story mode, a mission mode, a puzzle mode. Like, it was the most fully fleshed and wonderful Dr. Mario game. And it even introduced two new songs. Like, instead of just Fever and Chill, there were two new songs added on. And they're good. They're not as good as Fever because it's one of the best songs ever. But it's a phenomenally well-featured puzzle game, and it's the best they've ever done Dr. Mario. And I wrote a whole thing on this on Geekade a while back because it drives me crazy, because ever since this one, every release of Dr. Mario has been a step down. They've been like, really? Just slowly yanking features from it, and sometimes they'll introduce different ones, like the whole Dr. Luigi thing, which we'll get to later, but none of them have come close to the absolute worthwhile package that is Dr. Mario 64.
Well, all right then.
Ta-da. All right. And speaking of 2001, nah, that's... Why did I mention Animal Crossing for GameCube in 2001? That's not right. Maybe that was...
drunk?
I must have been drunk, because now I'm on to... Yeah, that Animal Crossing does not belong there. I must have gotten my lines crossed somewhere from, like, that was maybe when the N64 one came out, I think. Yeah,
so
I'm going to say...
So blurry-eyed.
Yeah, I'm going to say something went screwy there. Either way, okay. Wherever Animal Crossing is supposed to be, what we said about it still belongs. My date is just wrong.
I take it all back.
So, all right, 2001, we get the launch title for the Nintendo GameCube, Luigi's Mansion. Did you play this game?
Yes, but years after it came out.
I love this game. And I still think it's one of the best-looking GameCube games. It's so good looking.
I just don't remember it all that well.
This one I remember very distinctly because it was, you know, the first time seeing the Mario characters in this, you know, with this kind of graphic fidelity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were coming off of N64 and now we're playing Dreamcast games and PS2 games, and now I finally get to see what Nintendo's characters look like with these kinds of graphics. And
right.
Luigi was, he was just brimming with so much character in this game. He was so much more of a unique character than Mario had ever been in anything ever.
They gave him so much more personality.
They really did. Like, you know, the scenes where you go up to a door and you see his hand shake a little bit before mm-hmm. it grabs the doorknob, or the fact that he is essentially singing the soundtrack the whole time you're playing is so wonderful.
It's pretty funny.
And there was a button just to have him go, Mario, Mario. It's so great. And he just gets the vacuum cleaner and the Game Boy Horror, which is like a little Game Boy Color that says horror on it instead, that uses the map. This game was just delightful. And I never played the sequel. I even have it. I've just never gotten around to playing
it. The 3DS one?
Yeah.
It's good, right? Like, don't people...
I heard it was great.
Think it's just good?
Yeah. People
you just
think
haven't
that it's
gotten
great.
To it?
Yeah, it was... It came out... I got that one for free, actually, when I worked for Nintendo. They gave mm-hmm. me a 2DS in Luigi's Mansion, and I think I might have still been playing Kid Icarus Uprising at the time, like on mm. another playthrough or something. I was into something else, and I also know that A Link Between Worlds was right around the corner. So I think that's why it just kind of fell through the cracks. I should really go back and play that game. Because I love the original Luigi's Mansion. It was a great game. And Mario's appearance in it is, you know, he's... essentially the damsel in distress. He's like,
which is
stuck
kind
in a
painting
awesome. Or something. Yeah. This is the game that Mario's missing should have been, you know?
Right.
This was an actual Mario's mission is missing and Luigi goes to save him. And it's so delightful. Of course, Luigi would wins a mansion in a contest he didn't enter. That's, I love the premise of this game.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right, I
sincerely dislike the professor's name or the doctor's name. Dr.
Professor Egad.
Ugh, stop it. That's so dumb.
And the Poltergust.
So that's dumb.
I love that ghost vacuum, the Poltergust.
Oh, God.
Delightful. Okay, so also in 2001, in the early on in the GameCube's life cycle, we got the sequel to Super Smash Brothers, Super Smash Brothers Melee.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's not a game I played either.
This is a game that I put way too many hours into. The Super Smash Brothers Melee was such a crazy sequel because... the original Super Smash Brothers was a really cool game. It wasn't extraordinarily, like, it didn't have a lot of features, you know?
Right.
Like, it had a couple of modes. Smash Brothers Melee, like, they introduced the trophies and a single-player campaign, tons of new characters.
They went, oh, shit, we got to make a game next time.
Like, they didn't have to. I think this was this is the way possibly. Sakurai works. He's just like... I can do everything. We're going to put everything possible in this game. Everything we can think of. Go team. Do it now.
Go team venture.
Go team venture. And he did. This game was just stuffed with awesomeness. And obviously Mario was a playable character in it. So is Luigi. And they introduced Peach as playable in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. I'm already yawning. This is not good.
No, it's not.
No. Give me another tough one. Yeah, Super Smash Brothers Melee. What the hell can you say about it other than I played the crap out of this game? People still play it to this day. A lot of people swear this is the best one that there ever was. I disagree. I think the current one, Super Smash Brothers for Wii U, is the best game because mm-hmm. I don't remember if I talked about it with fighting games, where fighting games devolve into like there's like two or three top tier characters and that's all people play as in tournaments. And when you look at a tournament of Smash 4, people are all kinds of different characters because that's how well balanced it is. And I think that's great. And you just don't see that much in Melee. You see, like, you know, Fox, no items, Final right. Destination.
Right. It was a little bit more balanced overall.
Yeah. But it's an amazing game, and I love it. All right, let's see. Next up, 2001, still, Mario Kart Super Circuit, the first portable Super Mario Kart game, and I freaking loved this one, too. It's
very good.
Very, very good. Had a lot more in common with the Super Nintendo game than the N64 mm-hmm. game, which I was fine with because I love the Super Nintendo one as well.
Right.
And you can't really do polygonal like that on a Game Boy Advance anyway.
Or at least you shouldn't.
Yeah, at least you shouldn't. Because people did try. It's just Mario Kart. It was great. It had some cool characters in it and had, you know, the Toad's voice in it, which wasn't all like, I'm the best! It was basically curbing a lot of N64 assets as far as like some of those animations and the voiceovers are concerned. But great courses, really creative courses. And eventually you can unlock the whole Super Nintendo games course
which
library.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, that was great. And this was the first one that ever that featured retro courses in that respect, right. Which has been kind of a staple in Mario Kart games since. Also in 2001, we got Super Mario Advance, which was a souped-up version of the All-Stars version of Super Mario Brothers 2.
Mm-hmm.
The Super Mario Advance series kind of bugs me, mostly because of the titles.
They're obtuse.
The titles just keep getting stranger from here, but Super Mario Advance made me really happy because it gave me this glimmer of hope that, oh, they haven't forgotten about Super Mario 2. I get to play as Mouser in like a recent, not play as Mouser, play against Mouser,
right,
and like Claw Grip in this semi-modern game. And granted, there was something kind of irksome about the fact that I'm playing a game that was like, I'm playing a game that I bought for full price that is a fraction of what Super Mario All-Stars was. Like,
right.
It's a slightly souped up version of that, but not souped up enough to make it worth the price of buying this. Like, you took a fraction of a game and you're selling it at full price, and they just kept rolling with it, except they never released their version of Super Mario Brothers 1 as a Super Mario Advance game, because the next one they did, also in 2001, was Super Mario Advance 2 Super Mario World.
Which makes sense.
Because you just skipped over Mario 3.
Right. Because nobody liked that one.
Yeah. It was the least popular one, right? What? And again, it was a slightly souped up version of it. It had like, you know, a new cutscene in the beginning or something. Right. And they added voiceovers. So, I don't know. It was great to have these games portably. But I never really got over that itch in the back of my head that was like, it's great that I have these on the go, but at the same time, like, Super Mario All-Stars and Super Mario World exists as a cartridge on Super Nintendo, and now they're selling these all again piecemeal. I feel kind of weird about that.
It kind of started some of the issues that I have with Nintendo now of how much they charge for their stuff, because people have always paid it.
Yeah, and this one...
Nobody should have paid full price for this.
And like, I see where they were coming from. This was the first time these games were portable, and it was a remaking of those games, even if it was essentially the Mario All-Stars versions ripped out. They did add stuff to it, so I could kind of see it then. It was kind of irksome. Not as bad as it got. But you're right. This was the start of it. This was the twinge of that.
Right, and because everybody paid for it,
They kept that train rolling,
and they still charge, you know, $10 for Super Mario Run or whatever the hell the iOS thing is. It's like, it's ridiculous.
I'm gonna disagree with you on the Super Mario Run thing.
It's a ridiculous price point for an endless runner, for a mobile phone game. It does not matter
there is
how much
easily
content is there.
$10 worth. Like, I have 10 billion times over gotten my money's worth out of that game.
It is a
I understand that other games are cheaper on the marketplace. I get that's the going rate for games in that marketplace. I don't think that there was any, I think it was a risky move, and it obviously didn't pay off for them the way that they wanted it to, but them devaluing that game just to be in line with what other people are charging for these types of games, this one is really good, and they put a lot of effort into it, and they've updated it since then for free, and there's easily $10 worth of game there. Easily. Like, it's not even close. It is. I don't even mess with Arkanoid Space Invaders anymore. Like, every other iOS game I have ever gotten, I have never touched nearly as much as this Mario Run game because it's freaking fun.
It's because you won't download Puzzle and Dragons, Chris.
We'll get to that.
Is that on this list?
I think it's next week.
Nice.
All right, so...
I think that one's in January.
Trucking on. Trucking forward. Super Mario Sunshine. Oh, it's 2002. We're on a new year. Give us the music.
My goodness. Falling asleep at the wheel here. Sorry, I had to turn my keyboard off because Kat was here. All right, 2002, song number 3, Hot and Her from Nelly. And it certainly was. Number 2 was Foolish by Ashanti. Not a song I know.
No clue.
And to fucking solidify that in the early 2000s, the United States of America done lost its mind. The number one song of 2002 was How You Remind Me by Nickelback.
Ooh.
Hmm. Yeah, I couldn't pick that song out of a lineup either.
Really? That one, yes, you could.
Yeah, I mean, yes, maybe I could, but I don't know it now. You would have to play it for me. I got nothing.
I'm not gonna.
Thank you. So, 2002 kicked off with the sequel to Super Mario 64, which was much maligned at the time and is now looked back on extremely fondly, much like Legend of Zelda the Wind Waker.
Right.
Super Mario Sunshine came out, and boy, what a weird game this is.
So strange. And you're right, people hated this game.
It was very divisive. It wasn't as divisive as Wind Waker, because, you know, Wind Waker was... People right. wanted a gritty, realistic Zelda game, and they got a cartoony game.
Right.
Super Mario Sunshine was a Super Mario game through and through, but it was also, like, you had this water jetpack thing, and that was the game, like, with this water jetpack, and people really just wanted more platforming, like in Super Mario 64.
Right, and the fact that this was not Super Mario 64 2...
Yeah, it wasn't...
Really pissed a lot of people off.
It did, and now it's funny, retroactively, like, now this game is, like, praised beyond belief, and I think probably more so than it should be, because, look, I do think this is a great game, and I loved it at the time, and I still love it now, but having recently replayed a chunk of this game, there's some really, really uncomfortable stuff in it.
Really?
Well, particularly the scene where... Baby Bowser or Bowser Jr. starts calling Peach Mama Peach.
Oh, yeah. That's, and yeah.
We talked about this on the show when I was replaying it, actually, maybe like a year ago. And it's really uncomfortable, like having the conversation with, like, calling Peach his mommy. And then Peaches are like, I'm your mommy. Like, you would know, lady.
She would.
Like, if anyone would know, it'd be you.
Yeah, she would. That's not, I don't imagine you forget that.
Yeah, so it really just kind of, I will always be angry at this game for actually making you think, like, what did Bowser do with, like, it makes you think about sex between Bowser and Peach, and I'm not okay with that.
No, that's weird.
You don't need to do that. And there was voice acting in this game. It, like, right. It tried to go a little.
Just, if that's the thing I want to see, there's plenty of websites I can go to scratch that particular itch.
Yeah, I don't want that in my official Mario games. Yeah, so it's a little uncomfortable
weird to make
play.
That canon.
And there's some, you know, there's some weird stuff, some weird camera issues from time to time. But all in all, it is a very solid game. I think visually it's very nice, particularly the water effects in this game are just unbelievable. And my thought of why this has never been ported is because the GameCube had those analog trigger buttons
right. That
were so unique, and they were tied very specifically to this game with the way the water shoots. But there was so little in this game that actually required that. Like, I feel like they could just do a, you know, light spray, heavy spray with a very little effort and really accomplish the same thing. But did you play Sunshine?
No. Didn't the water pack, like, talk?
Yeah, Flood was alive.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, Flood was also from EGAD.
That's weird.
EGAD made Flood and the Poltergust.
Yeah.
But yeah, Flood, and it had this really obnoxious
Nintendo.
Really obnoxious voice too.
I was gonna say, I thought that was like the one of the chief complaints that I remembered of, like, not only is this not exactly what we wanted, but like I've got Tingle here fucking pissing me off.
The whole time I'm trying to play this game when it talked. Now, granted, once you actually got into the gameplay, it rarely interrupted you to do cutscenes or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then there were these bits, and it was just like, why? There's this whole weird subplot where Bowser Jr. turned himself into like Shadow Mario that didn't even look like Mario. Like it was shaped like Mario, but he was this weird shadow creature. And Mario's standing right over there. Like, how dumb are the people in Isle Delfino to be like, that's clearly Mario using this paintbrush and painting all over the place, even though he's like has flesh-colored skin and overalls and is not a blue shadow monster. Game's ridiculous. I should never have to call into question the plot of a damn Mario game.
No, you really shouldn't.
Because that's not what anyone's here for. No one's here for a story.
No. Well, something I am, and stupid. That's why I've never liked them.
That's because you're insane.
Well, I need the narrative to make sense, Chris.
And you know what? And sometimes the narrative does. You know, New Super Mario Bros. U, we'll get to that later, I think has my favorite Mario story ever. Like, the whole story is, oh, they're all going to sit down and eat a cake. Never mind. All the airships show up, punch the cake, beat the crap out of everyone, steal the princess, throw everyone into a tree. And that's the story. Like, yeah, Bowser shows up, steals the princess, and that's it. Or was that the one where it was one of them was as simple as, like, they're all standing around and somebody walks up and says, hey, look over there. And they steal the princess. And that's the story. I can totally back that. I don't need this weird Super Mario Sunshine Bowser Jr. thinks Peach is his mom.
No,
grossness. Next up in 2002, we got Mario Party 4. Now let's never speak of it again. Also in 2002, this title hurts me to say. Yoshi's Island Super Mario Advance 3.
Nope. Try again.
Back
in the namerator there, Nintendo.
If you remember, on Super Nintendo, Yoshi's Island was called Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island.
Right.
So this is technically Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island Super Mario Advance 3, which is not even the dumbest of the names yet.
No.
But, whoa, boy. And yeah, for a time, this was a reasonable substitute for the original Yoshi's Island, which I've gushed on and on about it being, I think, is an absolute masterpiece of a game.
Right.
This, you know, it was a portable version, and it was very toned down because there's no Super FX chip on the GBA. So there was a lot of emulating of those effects that wasn't as good as the Super Nintendo game. The sound was a little different, a little tinnier. It added the modern Yoshi, like, effects instead of the, like, Super Nintendo, whatever the hell that sound's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little, it was a pale imitation. And not even that pale an imitation. It was just a slightly anemic imitation of the Super Nintendo game. But it was still played great. It was still a very serviceable, portable Yoshi's Island.
But again, way too expensive.
See, this one didn't bug me, though, because I don't know that it should have, because this was like, this was basically like buying, you know, your HD remaster for whatever price that they released it at, you know?
Yes,
GBA games were $40. Price. I don't know, sometimes they are. Like, this was buying a game that wasn't that old, but is now portable. And this was also a fully featured game that was never, like, released on some sort of compilation. Like, this one I didn't have a problem with the price, because this wasn't something that was already re-released as a compilation and then cherry-picked out to be sold separately. This was something that was just a new version of a game that existed elsewhere with new features. I get this one. I'll defend that price on this specific one. I will not defend the title.
The title, however, can go pound sand.
It can. All right, 2002, Game & Watch Gallery 4. We've talked about the Game & Watch Gallery games before. This is a GBA version, so the graphics are slightly prettier. It's still just a collection of super fun, catchy Game & Watch games redone with Mario characters in them and better graphics. Yay, right. Fun times. So, 2003, give me some music.
Number 3, Get Busy by Sean Paul.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that song.
Number 2, Ignition by R. I'm Going to Piss on You, Kelly. And okay. That's his official middle name. And it's a weird choice, but oddly
it's on his birth certificate. You think we would have seen that coming, but
yeah, you would have thought, but who would have known? And number 1, Into Club from 50 Cent. Fitty. Go Shorty, it's your birthday. We're going to party like it's your birthday.
Is that what that's from?
We're going to sip Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know, we don't give a fuck. It's not your birthday.
Wow, thanks. Thanks, Dan.
If I was going to look anywhere, Chris, I could find you in the club with a bottle full of, mama, got what you need.
You done?
I mean, like, I respect the dude because he got shot in the face 9 times and lived. Like, that's pretty tough. But he's a terrible rapper and made shitty games later.
Yeah, he did.
Like, it's just, Fitty's not good.
Speaking of shitty games, 2003 kicked off with Mario Party 5.
They just wouldn't fuck it. They still won't fucking stop with it.
They still won't stop with it.
They're not.
And Mario
fun.
Party 5 was the one with the microphone. They're like, you know what, we're get the microphone. You're going to yell into it or tap on it or do something. I don't know. I never played it, but I know that everyone traded this game in and were like, and here's the microphone. I didn't even figure out what to use it for. Like, it was dumb. So, yeah, that's all the talk we need to do have of Mario Party 5. Moving on.
We have at least 5 more of these to talk about.
At least 5 more. I think there's 12 more.
Fuck me running.
Ridiculous. Oh, anyway.
We got to get to the Mario Party Advance.
Advance and, you know, Toadstool Tour.
Fuck.
And Card Battle Dash or whatever the hell. Oh, so, all right, 2003 saw my favorite Mario Kart game up until Mario Kart 8, Mario Kart Double Dash.
Agreed 100%. My favorite up until 8.
Yeah, because 8
is
great.
It's so good.
Yeah, Double Dash is so awesome. And it's completely unique. I can't believe they've ever like included this as a mode to play in future Mario Kart games. Because
it's so fun.
It is, this whole mechanic. So if for some reason you've never played Double Dash before, Double Dash was Mario Kart, except instead of one person on a cart, you had two. And those two different characters had to work together. Like, one person would lean their weight. So if you had, like, a light person in front and a heavy person in back, you would turn different, then vice versa. And you would, you know, see them holding onto their items. Each individual character had a unique item that only they could get, which was super cool. Goddamn, this game is
really good.
It
looked really good.
Oh, yeah, it sounded really good. Had good music. It even had a LAN mode. Like, you could have a LAN party with Mario Kart Double Dash, which is so awesome. And then people eventually did that warp pipe thing where they made Mario Kart Double Dash online by tricking the GameCube modem into thinking that it was doing LAN mode.
I totally forgot about that.
Double Dash is freaking great. If you've never played it, go back and play it.
It's so good. Yeah. So good.
And obviously the Mario connection is that it's Mario Kart.
Right.
All right, then we have Mario Golf Toadstool Tour, which was on the GameCube. This was another Camelot Mario Golf game. It is excellent. It's basically Hot Shots Golf with Mario characters and Mario stuff in it. I've played maybe 5 minutes of this tops. I've heard that the people who have played this liked it quite a bit, and that's pretty much all I know about this game. What about you?
I don't know a ton. I was playing Hot Shots Golf instead.
Ah, gotcha. All right, let's see. We had Nintendo Puzzle Collection, which, this game breaks my heart because it only came out in Japan, and I was so mad because this was a disc that had Yoshi's Cookie, Dr. Mario, and Panel Dupont on it. Where the hell didn't this come out in America? God damn it. I heard about this game and I was like, yay, I can't wait to play this on my GameCube for controller ports. I love Dr. Mario. Like, bring it. I love it. And it just never came out here in America.
It's a shame.
Profound sadness.
Profound.
Profound. And now we have, all right. Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3.
Right.
So this is wrong on a couple of levels. This was the fourth Mario Advance game that, right, if we're numbering them, went 2, 4, 5, 3.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the Super Mario. This was, again, so now we had Super Mario World, which was on a compilation cartridge, but only as a pack-in. You couldn't actually buy that thing separately. So, okay, you almost got me there. I still stand by that Yoshi's Island is good enough to be a standalone thing. But now we're right back to cherry-picking a piece of Super Mario All-Stars, plopping it on a cartridge, and calling it a day. Nah. Yeah, no. Because Super Mario Brothers 3 is phenomenal. But if you're just looking at content, Super Mario World is more game than Mario 3.
By a lot.
And Super Mario World is like, it's such a legit sequel to Mario 3. It's weird having Mario 3 come after Mario World. This was such a strange, strange title.
But people were so excited.
They were, and I was one of them. Reason was because the new shit that they added.
Right.
This time, they did, like, I guess the equivalent of DLC back then. What makes this game so fascinating is that this game came out after the e-reader came out, and they sold these packs of cards that not only had new levels in them, which were so cool to play new Super Mario Bros. 3 levels at the time, but those new levels included power-ups from other Mario games.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you could play the level of Super Mario, like Super Mario Brothers level 1-1, and get a leaf and fly around in it. Or you could do a ghost house in Super Mario 3 style that had Super Mario World music in it, because ghost houses weren't in Super Mario 3. And you could get the feather and have a cape attached to the Super Mario Brothers 3 sprite. It was so weird and so interesting.
And there was that weird thing where they did, where they included the white supremacist Mario power-up.
Yes.
Very strange.
That was very weird.
Just goose-stepping all through the Mushroom Kingdom. It's very odd.
You press the button, you go Sig Hail, it's...
Yes, Hammer don't tread on
Hammer
me
Brothers
flag.
Suit was cool, but yes.
It was oddly predictive.
Yeah, very, very strange. So yes, this was a fascinating game, and... They did re-release this on Wii U Virtual Console, actually, and they included all the e-reader stuff.
Again, at full price.
No, this was like, yeah, it was like $8 or something on Virtual Console, something like that.
Way too much.
I don't remember how much GBA games were. Really, you think $8 is too much for a Game Boy Advance game?
Yes.
How much do you think is fair for a video game?
For one of those, $5.
$5 for a GBA game, really?
Yes. Yep. Original Nintendo should be $1. Super Nintendo, $2.50.
See, like, I would argue that it really has to go game by game, but I mean, because yeah, like Balloon Fight is worth $1, but I don't think Super Mario 3 is not worth $5.
No, it's not. It's not because it, like. That's kind of the thing, like, and it's just a personal thing for me, but like, that's kind of what drives me nuts about this, of like, you're going to take away my backwards compatibility with things. And I understand the changeover from cartridge to disc and all that shit. Like, but like, you're charging me this amount of money for a game that I've already paid for multiple times at this point. At this point, it should be just a lower price point, I feel. You know what I mean? Like, I am excited to buy the Shadow of the Colossus remake that's coming out for PS4, mm-hmm, because it's only going to be $40. If it were $60, I wouldn't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that is a complete remake of the entire game. You know, with all the modern trimmings and trappings and all of that, and it's, you know, it's a $40 game. It is a budget title for what, you know, what is considered quote unquote budget for, you know, modern consoles. I don't know. I just, $8 feels like too much. And a lot of that is because, you know, we've gotten spoiled by the mobile marketplace of like full-fledged games being 99 cents or free with microtransactions, you know, and like, I understand that there's not really a way to do that with you know, with like with Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3 in 3D. You know, like I there's, you don't want adding microtransactions and stuff like that to it, but you know, you've sold this game 15 times at this point. Fucking 250. Moving on. You know,
well, like for us who have bought it, but this is also a new market. Like, there are people who had never played Super Mario Brothers 3 before when this came out. So this is a new opportunity to sell this game to people who've never played it before. And it's not the NES version. It's a version that has all this other extra stuff tacked onto it. It is essentially your HD remaster. So
250.
So what about Chrono Trigger? How much should Chrono Trigger cost now?
$5.
Really?
Yeah.
$5.
It's a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah, but it's huge. There's a ton of content in that game.
So?
So just because it's old, it should be worth less?
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
It does. So, like, I'm not buying a physical thing. Like, because that's the thing to me. Like, when you're dealing with this, like, a physical copy of that game is a different story to me, or just a different idea. Like, this is, it's just a digital download. Like, it.
So when I buy, if I want to buy the original Iron Man movie on iTunes and it costs $20 or whatever, that movie should cost less?
Yes.
Because it's old?
Yes.
I disagree.
And that's okay. I just don't think older stuff should cost as much digitally.
Obviously, like, $5 compared to the $50 it was when it first came out is less. You know, I bought Mario 3 when it first came out at $50. And, well, my parents did. I didn't buy it. But now on Virtual Console, Super Mario 3 is $5. That is a fraction of what it cost when it first came out.
But see, but by your argument, Super Mario Brothers 3 is $5. Super Mario Brothers is $5.
Yeah, see, now that I get where you're coming from. Like I said before, I think some of that stuff should be, I don't think it should be a flat rate like they did with Virtual Console, where they said, okay, all Super Nintendo games are $8, all NES games are $5. I think it's crazy to charge the same price for Dragon Warrior, the original Final Fantasy and Balloon Fight or Ice Climber. Like, those, there's no parity there. There's a serious difference in the kind of game that is.
That's true.
And you look at something like Super Nintendo, like, there's Tetris and Dr. Mario, and there's Chrono Trigger. Like, if somebody wanted to charge $15 for Chrono Trigger, I'd say that's a good value proposition, because that is easily $15 worth of game. Like, I feel like it should be judged more on the merit of what the product is that it's being sold, not necessarily how long it's been on the market, because I don't think there's any sense in really devaluing something just because it's old. I mean, Citizen Kane shouldn't be devalued just because it's old as dirt. Like, people want to sell a new version of Wizard of Oz. Like, there's, you know, people are being born all the time. Like, there's always going to be someone somewhere where that product is new, and there's no necessarily, it devalues that property in its entirety to say, like, well, this is, here's Super Mario 64, and this was a game that was about as important as a game could possibly be, but only because it's this old, it should cost this much now. And I just don't think that makes much sense to me. I think it should be driven based on what kind of content it is. Now, obviously, to a certain extent, the price should go down when things get old, just because legacy content is legacy content, and you can kind of package it together and sell it for cheaper, and especially if it's only going to be digital. But at the same time, going all the way down to $1 is, and it's also kind of a different argument from what you're talking about. Like, I've bought this game 15 times. Like, If Super Mario Brothers 1 cost me $5 once to own it digitally on every platform, I'm fine with that. If I have to pay $5 once, and now I own that digitally on every Nintendo platform it comes out on forever, in perpetuity, then that's something. But like you said, that's not how it worked.
No.
If you weren't part of the Ambassador program on 3DS, and you wanted your Wii Virtual Console Super Mario Brothers, it was $5, and then it came out on 3DS for $5, and then it came out on Wii U also for $5. Now, granted, if you had the Wii U and you had the Wii version, you could upgrade it to the Wii U version version for an additional dollar. But at the end of the day, I already paid my $5 for this game.
Right.
I have it on this very console, and you want to charge me a dollar so that I can switch it over and not have to switch over to Wii mode in order to play it? That's kind of nasty. And
right.
And that I will completely agree with you on. But I just don't think that something should be completely devalued just because it's old.
Well, and see, that's the thing. I don't necessarily disagree with your point. However, I'm imagining, right, that if I'm sitting there looking at games that I want to play, and I say, okay, I want to play Chrono Trigger, and I want to play Super Metroid. Now, I buy both of those digitally, though that's going to cost me almost $20.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could emulate them for nothing. That's one argument versus if Super Nintendo games are $250 for $5, probably going to buy them and not emulate them.
True, but that's
because
you.
That's just the world. But I don't think I'm alone in that.
No, you're not alone in that, but you're also not, you. I don't think you are the entire market. I think there's still a lot of people, even myself included up until very recently, that won't mess with emulation. Like, yeah, there's always going to be that guy, you know, that has like, oh, I got every game on my phone. But at the same time, your average consumer, by and large, doesn't do emulation. People who listen to this show do emulation. They understand what that stuff's all about. They understand getting a Raspberry Pi and just doing it that way, or something like something to that effect. But most consumers or most parents that would be buying this stuff for their children, they're not going to say like, oh, get online and get those emulators and hook it up to your TV. Like, this is such a foreign language to them, if they've even heard of it. I think that subsect of people that are emulating stuff is smaller than you think.
I don't know, because those people that are saying those things to their kids, that's us now.
Yeah, but have you met our friends?
Yeah, mine are filthy, dirty pirates.
I think of like yes, true. I think of our friends, but now think of all the people you went to high school with that weren't your friends. Do you think that most of those random people know how to emulate games?
Yeah, that's why they fucking keep getting Cody shut down. Fucking pricks.
All right, well, we spent an awful lot of time on that, so...
That's a whole other podcast, Chris.
That we just basically record a whole other podcast. All right, so let's bang through this stuff super duper fast. All right, so now we're on the last 2003 game, Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga. This game is super cool because it was a subsect of Super Mario RPG games, only on the handhelds. It was funnier, I think, than Paper Mario, and a pretty cool game. Have you played this?
And it was Mario and Luigi.
Yes, like at the same time. That's lots of jokes at Luigi's expense.
Sure.
And,
I thought that was really cool because like Mario and Luigi had always been a pair that were never really on screen together.
Yeah, like they weren't equals since Mario Brothers. Their right. first appearance was really the first and only time they were properly equals on screen outside of Mario Party, which we don't care about since then. So let's see. 2004, real quick, hit us with the music.
Number 3, If I Ain't Got You by Alicia Keys. Number 2, Burn by Usher. And number 1, Yeah by Usher.
Yeah.
Usher was really lazy with the song titles in 2004.
Good job, Usher. Okay, 2004 kicked off with Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door for the GameCube. Most people consider this the best Paper Mario game ever. Sure, I didn't really play it.
I don't think they're wrong. I think this took a lot of the stuff that people complained about, or not even complained, just some of the shortcomings of the original Paper Mario and really did it well, and it looked really good.
It did. Basically, this was what a sequel to Paper Mario should have been.
Right.
And according to most of the internet, everything's been a step down since then.
Yeah. Yeah. What, Sticker Star Saga is the next one we'll get to eventually?
I feel like there was another one before that. But
there might have been.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Ha ha. Classic NES series Super Mario Brothers. Now this is what we're talking about.
$20.
This was $20 for an NES launch title.
That's right.
And
go fuck a duck.
Yeah, this is a bad value right here. And I bought a bunch of them because of the collectability.
Sure.
And I admitted at the time that I was insane for doing so. Like, they were not a good deal. It was like, but they were in like this NES style packaging. The cartridges were the same gray as the NES carts. Like, that stuff was cool. They also did Dr. Mario and the classic NES series, and those were the two Mario titles that were released in that. So
even The Legend of Zelda was not worth the $20 price point.
No, none of those games were worth $20. None of those.
Balloon Fight and Ice Climber, good fucking Jesus.
I mean, the original Castlevania, I mean, even that, like...
It's not a $20 game. It's
because, like, and I think this is the one of the points, it's one of the points that I think I missed when I was talking about what I was talking about with games being old, is if you look at the content that they are, even and by comparison to what the current value of content is, and it kind of you want to kind of weigh it against that. Like, you look at a game like Yoshi's Island, as you know, and stack it up to whatever modern platformer was at the time, and like, yeah, that holds up next to that. But if you put, you know, classic NES series Dr. Mario next to that puzzle collection that they released on GameCube that had Dr. Mario paneled upon and Yoshi's Cookie in it, at like, I think that game was $30 in Japan, and Dr. Mario, just Dr. Mario NES version squeezed into a GBA cart was $20.
Yeah. Nope.
You're talking a shitty value proposition.
Yeah.
Like, you want to put the NES version of Donkey Kong up against other $20 games at the time, like, it's just not even fair.
No.
Mario Party 6 came out, nobody cared. Mario Party Tennis came out for GameCube. It was a sequel to Mario Tennis. This is where I think they started to get a little too cartoony with the stuff.
It was just too ridiculous.
Yeah,
the power shots, and like, it was just, it became a game of like balancing power-ups as opposed to a game of tennis that also had some fun stuff with it.
Exactamundo. Mario vs. Donkey Kong came out on Game Boy Advance, and this game is equal parts awesome and disappointing, because this was the sequel as...
94.
This was the sequel to Donkey Kong 94, which I literally just got a message on my screen from Dean that he just bought that game. He bought it because he'd heard us talking about it on the podcast, and he was like, that sounds really cool. I want to play the game, Super Game Boy version. So he just bought DK94 on Game Boy and a Super Game Boy. So good for him. So this was a sequel to that, and it just didn't quite live up to it. It had the same mechanics and everything. I didn't like the look of it. It had that weird, crunchy, CG-ish Donkey Kong Country look to it.
It does not look very good.
Yeah, it's not a great look on it, especially following up that miraculous DK94. Let's see, Mario Golf Advance Tour. Did you play this one?
I played this one more than I played the console version, but it's could not pull me away from Hot Shots.
Yeah.
Like, they've just never, like, and I know that's blasphemy to some people, but the Mario Golf games have never been as good as Hot Shots, in my opinion.
I can't say that I have an opinion. I've barely spent time with them. Let's see. Mario Pinball Land. This was this game is pretty unremarkable. It's not a great pinball game. It's not super fun. But what is awesome about this game is the premise is that Mario is actually the pinball. And when you look at the box, you're like, that's stupid. I don't understand this. And then you start the game and Mario's standing there and this piston thing comes up above and below him and literally squishes him into a ball, and he goes, ugh! And then you start the game and he's the pinball. Price of admission alone.
No. I mean, I see your argument, but no.
That cracked me up so much when I turned this on. I was like, Mario Pinball Land, I love these kind of pinball games. Let's give it a try. I love Kirby's Pinball Land. And like, that intro had me rolling, and then like, I played the game and it's just kind of okay.
It's just an average pinball.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
Then we had the launch of the Nintendo DS with Super Mario 64 DS, another incredibly stupid title, but really, what else do you call it at that point?
Cause
it's Super Mario 64 on the DS. And they did this weird thing where like, you play as Yoshi, who like gets turned into Mario or something, and then you unlock all these different characters. That was really weird. And the Nintendo DS didn't have an analog stick, and Super Mario 64 was built for a damn analog stick.
Yeah.
it's neat that the game was portable, but it was when the 3DS came out with an analog stick and it was backwards compatible, this game immediately became infinitely more playable.
Yeah.
But it was, you know,
because you had to control it with the stylus, right? Like that.
Yeah. Like on had that thing that you would strap onto your thumb and like do a little virtual analog stick. And
yeah, nope.
And the last thing released in 2004 was Yakuman DS, which is a Mahjong game only released in Japan that has some Mario-themed stuff in it.
Boo.
Best game ever. All right, Dan and I are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to marathon the second half of this as quickly as we possibly can. For God's sake, what's wrong with us? You're listening to the Stone Age Gamer Podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, Geekade's Gabby Robbins continues her First up, Geekade's Gabby Robbins continues her reread of her favorite books from her childhood with a series that hooked her like Harry Potter before Harry Potter was a thing. In fact, this series is similar to Harry Potter in more ways than just magic. But does it hold up as well as she remembers? Find out in revisiting the Circle of Magic series located in the Think Tank.
Then, for your ninth visit to the Nonstop Comic Shop, prepare your ear holes for Jordan's vocal stylings as he kicks off the latest episode with a Thor-themed parody of everyone's second favorite Steve Miller Band classic. He's got a nice singing voice. I did listen to the beginning of this episode, and he's got that vibrato going on pretty well. Way to go. Way to go, Jordan.
Good on you, Jordan.
I just gave a thumbs up in the audio podcast because I'm awesome. Mm-hmm. Then, if you survive that, you'll be treated to a thorough look back at Thor 184 through 186, a story arc they call so lazy and boring that it's actually vividly memorable. And, you know, a review of Thor Ragnarok, which I saw. I actually got to go out and see a movie, and it was so fun. Good. I really liked that movie.
It was so good.
It was just excellent. So don't miss...
I've been following for like a half hour.
Oh, that was great. Don't miss Nonstop Comic Shop Episode 9. Keep Ragnarokin' Me Baby.
It's an excellent title. Finally, Chris.
Yeah?
Do you remember Dean?
Who's Dean?
I think he's a guy you mentioned a few minutes ago.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Boy, this joke worked better before I did that.
It did. You know what else? He used to be on this show.
Sure did.
Back when no one listened.
So you mean now?
What are you talking about? Well, he's got himself another video game related podcast right here on Geekade. And guess what?
What?
There's a new episode this very week. What's he talking about? Of course, the new Bubsy game.
Of course.
How much does he love it? Who the fuck is Glenn? Tune into Vest and Friends, episode 21. I'm looking at Bubsy memes to find out.
You can catch all this quote-unquote great stuff. Oh, I'm just kidding. No, this is actually great content. You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com. And we're back. Here we go. 2005. Dan, what was going on in the world of music in 2005?
A whole lot of shit, Chris. Unfortunately, in 2005. And this, honestly, is probably the best reason that we decided to do this. Number three, Let Me Love You by Mario. In addition to putting out all these video games, he was also putting out songs. Number two is possibly the greatest song ever written by anyone in the history of the universe, and that is Holla Back Girl by Gwen Stefani. And I stick by it. Fuck you. I hear you, Justin.
It's no Baby Got Back, but I suppose I can respect your opinion.
This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Go bananas. Number one was We Belong Together by Mariah Carey.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what doesn't belong together.
NBA Street Volume 3 with and Mario.
But that was the first Mario game released in 2005. The GameCube version of NBA Street V3 hilariously includes Mario, Luigi, and the princess playing basketball against real basketball players.
Mm-hmm. It was dunking weird. On them.
It was weird. It wasn't all in. It wasn't entirely terrible because the NBA Street had that slight twinge of like, this ain't real. Like,
oh, no. NBA Street was super fun and super weird.
And so, like, this wasn't all together bizarre. It was just, like, it was one of the first times where you really have to think of Mario's proportions and be like, what is he?
Yeah, this just doesn't work. Something it's, weird here.
Yeah. It's definitely slightly unnerving.
He's
but
like a man-child.
In kind of a very amusing way.
Yeah.
Like I was very amused by their inclusion in this game.
I did not enjoy his tank top.
Nah. Did he wear a tank top in this one? I thought they were in their regular outfits. Mario, NBA Street. I thought they were just in their regular old outfits, but...
Or is it the tennis one where he's got the tank top?
Yeah, no, he's just wearing his overalls and shit. Oh. I'm sorry. Whatever I'm looking at the screenshots.
It's so weird. It's so weird.
It's because they're so colorful.
They really are. Not a great idea.
Oh my god, I forgot. I remembered this being absurd, but I forgot how crazy this is.
It is absurd.
They don't even look like they're in the same game. Like,
no.
They're there, but they look like they're blue screened in because it's just there's none of the color, like none of the realistic shading is being applied to these characters. It's like Roger Rabbit.
It is Sarah Palin levels of absurd.
God, I love this so much. Oh my god. This is just
breaking ankles.
Oh, just Google this. If you've never seen this before, you've just go on to Google and Google NBA Street Mario and just look at the delicious absurdity of how completely out of proportion these characters are.
Of Mario just fucking crossing up Vince Carter. It's just weird.
They're just rocking their regular outfits, except Peach, who's like skipped the dress and went with like a sporty pink outfit, which
yeah,
I've seen
her
use in other
booty shorts on.
Yeah, and like, but Mario and Luigi are just like, yeah, we'll do this in boots and overalls. We'll throw down on the street.
It's like they were just walking through New York City and saw a fucking pickup game of basketball. And they were like, well, we do everything else. Let's go be good at this, too.
God, so funny.
It's so weird.
And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have Mario Superstar Baseball for GameCube, which was extremely fun.
Was it?
This game's great. It is great. Because this game worked like the original Mario Tennis, where it was primarily a baseball game with a couple of cool things thrown in. You know, like, you could occasionally hit the ball out into the field and it would land in a warp pipe and then show up somewhere else. But
that's
at the end
of
the day, yeah, like, at the end of the day, like, I think this was the one that had, you could pick a Goomba to be on your team. Mm-hmm. And then, like, he just shows up and there's a baseball bat floating near him. Like, well, how is he doing this?
Well, he's telekinetic.
Clearly.
I think we all knew that.
Mario Superstar Baseball is actually a shitload of fun. Me and my staff had a lot of fun with this game at Game Crazy. A very, very good Mario sports game. Top notch. Then we had, boy, we're talking about absurdity, DDR Mario Mix.
Mm-hmm.
I played the shit out of this game.
That doesn't surprise me.
As it was part of my, one of my many attempts to be like, well, I heard people who play DDR lose weight, so I'm going to give this a shot. And I love rhythm games. And the absurdity of this game caught me. There's levels where you get to see Waluigi gracefully dancing. And it is unnerving, to say the least.
It's no Donkey Konga. Let's be honest.
It's no Donkey Konga. But DDR Mario Mix is a a wonderful, wonderful experience.
It is pretty fun. We played it in the store.
This whole story about how, like, some asshole stole, like, the, it was Wario and Waluigi, I think. They stole the magic music notes or something, and Mario's going to dance his way. This is so stupid, but it's such a ridiculous game. It is so ridiculous. And speaking of ridiculous, following up the success of NBA Street V3, also in 2005, EA put Mario and Friends in SSX on tour.
And this wasn't nearly as ridiculous as NBA Street.
Yeah, because, like, you know, they're by themselves pretty much. Yeah. Like when they're snowboarding down a hill, it's like, well, all right, so Mario's doing that. And it's just, there's nothing really to compare him against. He's not actually interacting with other realistically proportioned people,
right?
Which was, it works in New Donk City in Mario Odyssey. Like, as much as I did, I was kind of afraid that it wouldn't. It really works just fine, but it did not work in NBA Street. It's just hilarious. And again,
SSX is just fun.
They're in the same outfits too.
Yeah,
including Peach is like, she's rocking shorts. Like,
she's badass.
She just doesn't even care. Like, no. She's like, I'm not afraid of cold.
She's been kidnapped and apparently had sex with Bowser by this point of her career. She is simply out of fucks to give.
just ran out of them. They're all gone.
They're all gone. This is my bucket of fucks. Notice how it's empty.
Indeed. We got Mario Kart DS, which was a spectacular Mario Kart game.
Very good. Not as good as Double Dash, but very good.
Exactly, yeah, not as good as Double Dash, but it was a DS Mario Kart game. It was they didn't hit us with like weird touchscreen stuff or anything. And this was the one that had the mission mode, right?
Yeah.
I think this was the one that introduced that great mission mode, which they also didn't really come back with, which makes me sad. But yeah, Mario Kart DS was great. This was also where people figured out snaking on the online mode and basically ruined it for everybody.
Yeah, well, yeah. Fuckers.
2005 for the GameCube, Mario Party 7 came out. Yay. Boom. Also in 2005, Super Mario Strikers came out. I freaking love this game. My God, Super Mario Strikers is ridiculous. See, what I liked about Super Mario Strikers, did you play this one?
Nope.
All right, so what I love about Super Mario Strikers, first off, is it is probably the most violent Mario game next to Smash Brothers. Because they didn't do the typical Mario Sports thing with Mario Strikers where they're just like, and here's soccer, but with some Mario things thrown in. They more combined soccer with Mario Kart. So all of the Mario-esque things that happen in the game are attacks. So you're like playing the game and you get like, oh, what item am I gonna, oh, I get bombs, so I get to throw bombs at other players and then steal the ball and score.
That's actually how soccer is played, Chris. I know you're not a big sports guy, but that's actually fairly.
There are actual explosions, and like they had the shells, and like it's, this game was pure chaos, and like the art direction was so aggressive, it was so weird. Strikers is great. Nintendo DS, we got Mario and Luigi Partners in Time. Not as good as Superstar Saga, and also one of the few, I think, good uses of the awfulness that is the baby Mario characters.
Yeah, they're terrible.
I hate the baby characters.
Yeah,
especially
you should.
As like their own thing. Like, okay, this one, there's time travel involved. I get it. This is how these characters can exist at the same time. Yoshi's Island takes place when Mario was a baby. I get that. But baby Mario, baby Peach, baby Luigi, baby Rosalina, baby whatever the hell else thrown into the Mario Kart games as different... Stop with the baby characters. They're dumb. Stop it. Now, wait, you want to talk about a game with a bad value proposition. Yoshi Touch and Go for Nintendo DS. This is also an early DS game. Boo. And they charged full price for this thing, and they really shouldn't have, because while it is a fun game, it is a very simple game.
Yeah. It's, you touch the screen and he walks.
Oh, this is the one where you're falling.
Oh, shit, yeah.
You're baby Mario, and you draw like the clouds, and you're basically just trying to guide him to the bottom. It's a cool little game, but not a full price.
No, that's a 99-cent download.
Yeah, this is not something that this is, should have been a mode in a different game.
Yeah.
But then we also go back to the Game Boy Advance, and we get the first portable Mario Party in the form of Mario Party Advance. I never played it. Dan never played it. Let's never talk of it again. Also on Game Boy Advance, because they were still hitting that shit pretty hard, Mario Tennis Power Tour. Did you play this one?
I did not.
Me neither. Moving on. Game Boy Advance. It's late. We got to do this.
And 2005 was a big year.
It was a big year. So we also got Dr. Mario and Puzzle League, which is exactly what's on the tin. It's Dr. Mario and Puzzle League in one convenient package for your GBA. It's a serviceable version of Dr. Mario, and it was nice to get a non-themed version of Puzzle League. Like, they did the Tetris
Pokemon
Attack.
Pokemon Puzzle League and...
And Pokemon Puzzle League. And then it was just like, nah, screw it. We have characters for this. Let's just call it Puzzle League and call it a day. And they did. Yeah. And yay. And then we had also in 2005, Yoshi Topsy Turvy, which was the motion-controlled GBA Yoshi game that was not great. Not terrible, but they did that entirely playable. Yeah, because they did that gyroscopic thing, and it worked amazingly for WarioWare Twisted,
right?
But not so much for this.
not so much for anything else.
Yeah, no, thank you. 2005, the last thing that was released in 2005, we got Mario Kart Arcade GP, which is super cool and super weird.
I've never played it. I've never actually even seen it.
So I have. I actually, they had it in a movie theater near where I lived up in North Jersey. And it's very arcadey.
Mm-hmm.
Like something
Hydro Thunder arcadey?
More like quarter munching arcadey. Like you got it. Yeah. Like you got to, if you don't, even if you win, you have to put in quarters to move on to the next race or something like that. It's very, very quarter munchery.
That's dumb.
And it feels so different from a regular Mario Kart game. What used to be one of my favorite podcasts was Radio Free Nintendo from Nintendo World Report. And James Jones has gone on and on and on about the numbering of Mario Kart once they got to Mario Kart 7. Mm. They're like, but it's not the seventh one because there were the arcade games. And it's so stupid and it's so awful. And it's like, well, no, because these aren't Mario Kart games, basically. Like, these are a separate entity. Like, if you've played them, they shouldn't be numbered. They're not the next iteration of Mario Kart. They are arcade games completely. And I kind of get why these haven't been ported to home consoles, because they're freaking weird and they're developed by Namco and they've got Pac-Man characters in them and the items act a little differently. And
no,
it's a cool thing. And like, I get it for something like, you'll see them in Dave and Buster's when they have that kind of like tickety system and whatnot.
Yeah.
That's neat. But when you're pumping actual dollars into it to play it, and it, like, you finished a race and like, all right, put another dollar in here to play another race. It's kind of obnoxious. But they're such a neat curiosity. I definitely recommend trying them. All right, 2006.
Chris, yeah. I'm not going to lie. I think we should cut this here.
Yeah?
We're an hour and 40 minutes in.
Fuck. Yeah, and there's still so much.
There's so much left.
There's important stuff to talk about. God damn it, damn it.
I'm making a call.
Yeah. It's time to stop.
It really, like, we're going to be here for another hour and a half, and nobody wants to listen to one podcast that long.
There's too much important stuff to talk
about. We're just
going to
blow through and be like, bah, fuck it. Super Mario Galaxy, that's a game.
that was neat.
Mario Party, that's a game that came out on DS, too. Bah, fuck. You know?
Which, I won't talk anymore about Mario Party games. Like, we're just going to mention them and move on. But there's lots of other things I do want to talk about.
Even so,
Dan is right.
So much. Yeah.
It's time to cut it. Because even the next game, I have a ton to say about. So,
Yeah, there's just...
All right, we're going to have to keep this thing rolling a little bit longer than planned. So, it might be more than a four-parter.
I told you, 13 installments.
Christ on a cracker. All right.
Three easy payments of $9.99 and one hard-as-fuck payment. Gonna have to pay me in wampum.
Thank you, Mitch Hedberg. Yeah,
son of a bitch.
All right, that's our show.
It's hard to reach.
That's it. We're gonna go to bed. Yeah. Join us next week for not the grand finale of our not four part Super Mario retrospective. We're gonna keep this train rolling, I guess, until it's time to start talking about game of the year stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're gonna be talking about in our next one. We'll be talking about Super Mario Galaxy, New Super Mario Brothers Wii, Super Princess Peach, and a handful of other games. Boy, that was fun, huh?
It is. It's just there's so much.
There is so much, and I really thought we could. I thought there was going to be a lot to blow through here, but nope. We went on that big tangent, and there's just a lot to say about some of these games.
Yeah.
So, once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade, K-R-I-S, and Dan is at...
Geekade Chris, that's Geekade, K-R-I-S. No, at Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about send your hate mail to... If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher. Or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme song. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. We're going to keep this train going. We're going to talk about every Mario game, goddammit.
That's right. Be careful what you ask for, listeners.
That's it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.
We don't fuck around.